Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. I'm getting ready to dial my guest, which is Caroline DeGrave. Hopefully everything works, and we will get to talk to her shortly.
Hello?
Hello, Caroline. This is Mac.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, not at all. Thank you for being on.
Oh, of course, yeah, I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Might as well just jump right in. So,
Oh, perfect, that sounds great.
When did you realize that you wanted to go into filmmaking?
About 4 years ago, I was cast in a Western, and I was standing in line at Starbucks, actually, and waiting for my coffee, and there was auditions going on outside, and I wasn't aware of it. The director actually came inside and started talking to me, and I was actually quite suspicious of anybody that approached me to be in a movie when I wasn't anybody. I was just kind of like, what are you doing? And so I took his business card, but I was with a girlfriend, so we went about our business and talked and had our girl time, and then I left about an hour later, and he pestered me to audition again, and I said, no, I don't know who you are, and I left, and I don't know, I was sitting somewhere, and I was looking, I looked him up, actually, because I wanted to know who this guy was or whatever, because you know, the idea of being in the movie was intriguing, but I know that there's a process to go through to be in a movie, and I was kind of like, this is really odd. Like, I don't know who this guy is. So I looked him up, and he had done some documentaries and stuff, but it looked like he had been out of work for like 20 years. And his wife was in real estate and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I was kind of like, okay, well, so I ended up not finding any weird stuff, just that he had been kind of out of the loop for a while. So I ended up calling him and he picked up and he said he was still over at Starbucks auditioning people and that he wanted me to come by. So I said I would be there, and I went and I read for him, and then he asked me if I could be on a horse without falling off. And I said, sure, as long as it's not galloping or like jumping fences or something. So I was cast as a lead role. And then due to lack of foresight or maybe lack of producing experience, it never got distribution. So it didn't go anywhere. It went to a couple festivals, just local ones, and nothing ever really came of it. But what I did get was, A, the acting bug, and B, I got the sense that better than they could. Like, you know, when I have an intuition about certain things in business and marketing and those kinds of things. I've always been really good at that and networking and whatever. And I just kind of like thought, like, how did they not foresee that they were going to need distribution and try to secure something beforehand? I mean, I was new to the film industry. I had no idea how any of it worked. It was kind of just a big fog to me. But something just kind of felt wrong about it. Like, they really didn't put together very well. And obviously the producing aspect was very lacking. But it did give me a sense of, you know what, I know I can do this because I have a little bit of that organizational skill. I have that idea of like, this is a lot of moving parts and every part has to do its thing, you know, for it to come together as one whole. It's like one big machine with a lot of gears. And I'm like, you can't make this thing work if one of the gears isn't working. And you can't go and find it later in hopes that after you've made a movie, you're going to just go and walk into a studio with a movie under your arm and say, here, put this on. Like, it doesn't work that way. So what ended up happening is I made a short film. Just, you know, I got the funding myself. It was like $800 that I raised like in a couple days. And then I shot a movie on my phone with friends holding my phone. And I wrote the script and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then I had that premiere at the Etowah Film Festival that year. So that was 3 years ago. And it went on to win a special mention award at the One Reeler Film Festival, or it's a film competition, actually. It's a short film competition. And they had actually reached out to me because they saw it on IMDb, and they emailed me asking if I would submit it. So I said, sure. And so that just kind of got the ball rolling in terms of, like, you know what? I know that there's more to learning about this and more to do. But, you know, I think I'm on a path with something that is very doable. But it's, by the same token, it's an industry that's not very forgiving. And
right.
It is not an industry where you can just walk in and put in an application and say, I want a job as an actor or producer. That's
right.
Not how it works at all. It's not like most careers. It really isn't. You know, it's a very cutthroat industry. There's a lot of people trying to make it to the top. There's a lot of people, you know, that'll take your ideas or make promises they can't make good on. And, you know, you do have to navigate some of that stuff if you're very new, and you're going to learn the hard way in most cases. And that's what happened to me. I got burned a couple times, but it didn't really dissuade me from trying. I just kind of had to find my tribe. I had to find people that would work with me, that would support me, and that I would learn from, you know. And what I found is, you know, if you work with people who are already successful to a certain degree, they're not going to try to cut you down. It's when you work
right.
with people that are too close to your level that will try to bring you down once they get a little bit of attention. Because they don't want you to get the glory. And so I found it's actually much easier to work with people that are secure in their careers, that are doing their thing. And you know what? They want to help somebody who's trying to climb the ladder too.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Most.
Mm-hmm. And I think
no.
a lot of people do want to help in general. And I think most people are not malicious, but it is an industry that, you know, most people will take from you anything they can to make themselves successful. That doesn't mean they wouldn't help somebody down the road when they are successful, but it just means that you can't trust people that are still trying to make it.
Right. And it's kind of like that a little bit, no matter what kind of a job you have, but just
yeah.
more so.
Yeah. Well, it's I guess maybe a lot more apparent, or maybe there's just a lot more people trying to get into it because it is saturated.
Right.
I mean, it's not like you're going into Wall Street. It's film is a lot more glitzy and glamorous. You know, there's a lot of people that want to be the next Scarlett Johansson or Angelina, but you know, that's not the nature of it. And honestly, you know, it would dilute the star power if we had too many people that were getting the exposure. You have to keep those people marketable and keep the impression of them really, really, really shiny and bright to continue having that. You can't just flood, you know, you can't open the floodgates to Hollywood because then everybody would be mediocre.
Right. I agree.
Mm-hmm. So I get it. I get the structure of it. I know how it works. I know why it is the way it is. You know, I'm not looking to be the next freaking, like, you know, like crazy, like millionaire person that makes $30 million a movie or whatever. It's, I want to have a career in it, and I don't mind if it's modest. I don't mind if, you know, I make a good living at it without being super, super freaking acclaimed. I mean, of course that would be an aspiration, but I would be happy just making a career for myself doing that. So I think that's what makes my goal more attainable, and also doesn't really put me in a position where I'm like willing to do anything for people. Like, I'm kind of like, hey, I'm working. I have my other job. I'm also going to school, but I'm doing this and I'm producing a film right now. And I partnered up with a friend of mine who lives in Philadelphia, and we created Firefly 55 Films. It's an LLC. And mm-hmm. we actually got the funding approved for the budget. All we have to do is find somebody to put in first funds. So, but we have the LOI for the funding. And so we have several people that are interested and kind of looking more into it and that kind of thing. But, you know, these things take time.
And which movie is that you're talking about right now?
Coffeyville, Mississippi.
Ah, okay, yeah, because I did have that on my list, so I'll cross it off since you're already talking about it.
yeah, that's the first feature we are producing under our banner, and we have like 11 other films slated, but my partner is a script writer, so he's sitting on tons of great stories, and he's a very, very talented script writer, and I had some of the connects to get things ball rolling on it. He has the content, and he also has a few other connects of his own. So, I was able to get the LOI for the global distribution from it, which made it a little bit more attractive. We were able to attract star talent, give us an LOI. Then we were able to get somebody interested in funding it if we could get first funds. And it's basically for the insurance account kind of thing. So
right.
I said, okay, cool. So we're almost there. I mean, but we've only been at it for like 3 months and we've made really great progress. So, we have a lot of people that are going to be attached to it that are very professional, that have been in the industry for decades and are successful. And, they're not looking at this film like it's going to skyrocket them. They're looking at it like, hey, this is a good film, but they've got tons of projects of their own. So it's kind of like, it's pretty cool that they want us to be with them too. It's not like, we're dragging people along that haven't done anything. These people can really, really do something for the film.
Mm. Yeah, is it going to be a drama?
It's more of a coming of age. There's a drama element. It's a road movie, and that's kind of its own genre. It's like
right.
Selma and Louise or Sideways or Little Miss Sunshine or, any of those things.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like it might be good.
Yeah, it is really good. And it's got some really cool, twists in it, and the character development is really great. We actually have a location master right now putting together files of, what the road trip would look like and where we would stop in production, or we can get some B-roll and how we're tying some of the history of certain locations into the story and dialogue and, really developing our characters' backgrounds. And it's really looking very good.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always like to hear good news.
Yeah, no, it's a little treasure of a film, and I think it will do very, very well, and it's gonna set up a trend in terms of what we can do as a production company, and who we can work with. We have some pretty big names that are interested in being part of this, so. We're doing really well. We're doing our due diligence and getting everything set up the way we need to. We've got a few more things to kind of like tie up some loose ends in the next few weeks. But it's looking great. I just can't really give you too many. I can't really give you too many clues without like actually breaching, confidentiality. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm one of the people that understands how that works.
Yeah.
When anything's in pre-production or it's just been announced or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
It just depends on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to the person who owns the rights to it, then
mm-hmm.
they may be able to talk about it, but they usually
mm-hmm.
don't want to talk too much about it anyway.
Right. Well, right, because we want to keep the surprise for when we actually go into production and we have the production art to present and whatnot. I mean, I created a page for the film, but I haven't really invited a bunch of people to it, nor have I posted a whole bunch, because the cast has changed a couple times just because of who we have involved. And, it's been advised to us, take the cast down, because there's so many things that happen along the way. You don't know until you're ready to go into production. You don't know what changes are going to be made. So
right.
It's a little premature to put it up there. And I get that indie filmmakers
right.
usually on a very small budget can do that. But because we are going for a very professional film with a much bigger budget than we anticipated and people involved that are really bringing up our production value, they want to have a hand in casting. So I said, okay, you know what? You're the experts. I'm not going to pretend I know the people you do. So I said, okay, it's in your hands.
In the indie film industry, it does happen like that, where you can have people all set up and then things change. Mm-hmm. Well, especially because most people in the indie film industry are doing like several films at one time.
Yeah, and that's fine, but it's not the trajectory of Firefly 55 films. We want to do great films with bigger budgets. We're starting off with a modest budget, but it's much bigger than I would have expected. You know, the budget being approved for $5 million.
Wow.
So that's what we're starting off with, and you know, we're going to do nothing but go up from here. So we're not really going indie. Everything's going to be union. We're going to have union people involved, and we're going to have great actors involved. And we do have the budget to be able to give them, you know, contracts, et cetera. So that's the direction we're heading. And, you know, we as a company, Firefly 55 Films, cannot afford to treat it in an indie manner.
Right.
So I'm learning this curve too as I go, because I started off with, you know, putting little things here and there and who we're casting, et cetera.
Yeah, well, it sounds like your company is you might even still be considered indie, but higher end indie. That's what I like to call it. Are you still there? No, you're not. Okay. She got cut off. Something happened. So I'm going to call her back. Just stay with me, people, okay? And I'm going to dial her number now, and hopefully we can get reconnected. Not sure what happened.
Hello? I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't know what happened there.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
It was a little bit funny for me because I'm talking and I keep an eye on the board here, but I took my eyes off of the board for a second and I was talking, and then I looked up because you hadn't said anything, and I'm like, oh, well, no wonder she didn't say anything. She's not there.
No, it's I guess sometimes it just happens. I'm sorry, but anyways, I know it wasn't on my side or on purpose. It's just like, I don't know what happened. It's happened to me a couple of times, and I think it might be the reception where I am. It's a little bit spotty, so.
Things happen, and plus, you know, Blog Talk Radio. Granted, this wasn't Blog Talk Radio's fault, but Blog Talk Radio has terrible sound, and there are some nights when I have lots and lots of trouble with it. So, you know.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
this is
what's going to
happen, right? We're okay. I think we'll make it.
Yeah. So all that I was saying was that I consider it's a way for me to put it anyway. Firefly 55 Films sounds like something that I would consider indie, but higher end indie.
Yeah.
That's just the way I look at it.
Yeah, I think it has a little bit of that quaint feel to it. I mean, it doesn't come across like, you know, Universal or Paramount or, you know, these huge, huge studios.
Right.
I kind of thought about that at first, but we are still who we are, and I want to kind of pay tribute to where we come from. And I had originally a sole proprietorship that I started a couple of years ago that was called Firefly Productions. And then when I partnered with Leon, he and I were like, well, I've always had kind of a thing with the number 55 because, I actually had an experience on 5/5, which is May 5th, 11 years ago, and I quit drinking that day.
Oh, well,
so 55, thank you. Well, 55 became kind of a number for me, like my lucky number or whatever have you. And it just kind of went with the F theme, So I was like, Firefly, 55, and then productions didn't fit, and I was like, films. And Leon was like, yeah, that sounds good. I mean, it gives it a little bit of an indie feel, but there's also a feel of vigor to it. And it was kind of nice to go medium because we have some films that can be done very well on a lower budget, and we have other ones that can be way upwards of where we are now with Coffeeville. So it's really, you know, we can really go both ways. We can have some big budget films, like we can have some other ones that, you know, we both know directors or producers that are trying to make it up there and trying to get into better projects, like away from the indie world, but they need a stepping stone. And I've always told Leon, and we agree on this, that, you know, when we actually get things going and we have our first film done and it goes in the box office and we get a return, you know, I would like some of our smaller scripts or ones that could be done with less money. I would like to be able to maybe, you know, give a couple of those out to directors that we know or producers that are on their way up or actors that are, you know, B actors but trying to make it up there. Just kind of to lend a helping hand to, I guess, to let them know that we understand where they are. Like we weren't married into this. We didn't, you know, we weren't somebody's child. That we have, because we know a film industry is tons of nepotism, right? So it's like, no, we came off out of our apartments on the street, made films, and we got this thing produced. We know where you're coming from. But at the same time, we don't want to just hand out this opportunity to whoever. So it's, you know, we're going to have that sense of we want to help you, but it's not going to be like open season.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we
have to preserve the integrity of what we're doing, too.
Right. And the kind of things that you want to accomplish with your...
Absolutely,
with your brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be a really great opportunity for some people, but you know, we are also going to be selective about who we, you know, let work on projects or whatever, but it is going to help some people too. So, you know, we want to be that production company that's not unapproachable, but people regard it highly.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good goal to have. So this mm-hmm. Coffeeville, Mississippi, is going to be your mm-hmm. very first production with your Firefly 55
yeah.
films.
Uh-huh, cool. Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. I'm super excited about it. I'm very proud of it. We're making some great headway, and it's nonstop calls and emails and text messages with all sorts of people, but it's exciting, too.
Oh, I'll bet. I mean,
oh, yeah, it's super exciting. I love producing. You know, I love acting, and that was my first love because that's the only thing I knew about film. You know, when I was in that Western, the only thing I knew was acting, and I barely knew what that was. You know, I came off the street. I'd never done acting classes in my life. You know, unless you want to count drama in, like, seventh grade, which I just sat there and, like, read monologues. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah. But I'm a people person, and I'm somebody who's not, like, shy. I don't have stage fright. I can go talk in front of people. I don't give a damn, you know. So I'm like, I have a very easy manner about me. So acting wasn't very far-fetched, but I wouldn't consider myself a professional actor. And I wouldn't consider myself somebody that, you know, aspires to be a really, really great actor with super intense roles or that kind of thing, because honestly, I think I want more control kind of person. And I, mm-hmm. even when I'm on set just acting, I always end up wanting to direct or be in the middle of what they're doing or tell people what to do. And acting, I don't get to do that. I'm like, I'm on somebody else's chessboard, you know. Here, go to E5. Okay, there I go. Go to C3. Okay, there I go. No, I don't want to do that. I want to be the one delegating.
I can understand that because I love delegating.
Yeah, I mean, and that's my nature. So I mean, I get that I'm like that, and I know my place when I'm not a producer in a project. But I have to bite my tongue sometimes.
I'm sure, yeah. And especially sometimes when you know that, hey, I know for a fact that this would work better a different way, but hey,
yeah,
that's not so tough.
So what I end up doing sometimes is have really loud conversations with somebody, and I'll say, hey, maybe what if we did this? That would be really cool. I'm trying to, like, you know, like, bypass the whole tell you what to do thing. I'm like, you know, I put on this, like, super cheerful, like, voice, like, oh, my God, what if we did this? Isn't that cool? They're just looking at me like I'm trying to insert it sneakily by being a little bit too excited, a little bit too girly about it. You know, I'm like, I can pull this off. Really, I can. No one's going to see me coming.
And does it work?
No. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. Honestly, there are times where I actually get the listening ear kind of thing, or else I'll have somebody overhear me that's not directly the person in control, and then they'll suggest it as if they pawned it off to them, and I let it slide because at least it's getting done. I'm not going to jump in there and say, hey, I said that. It's my idea. I'm like, good. It got passed on. It's like playing telephone. You know, here's that sentence, pass this on. Hopefully it gets repeated the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of that. It's like you have to say it within earshot of somebody who has a little bit of power or can at least say something to the effect of what you were talking about. And because they have more pull, people actually pay attention.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's a very crafty way of doing it, but, you know, I use what I got.
Yeah, sometimes you got to do things in a different or unexpected way.
It's indirect. It's indirect, but, and it's not like I'm trying to take the reins from anybody and I'm not stepping on people's toes because I don't want to do that. And sometimes I'm just not in a position to be listened to as much. And, you know, so it's like, okay, well, how am I going to do this? How do I say something without telling them from me? I've got to somehow get it heard, you know. So
right.
I've done that, or I could just tell somebody that I know I'm comfortable with on set that is close with the director or the producer and say, like, hey, I was on this other project and they did it this way. Do you think that would work? And then they'll think about it and be like, oh, you know what? Yeah, that could work. Okay. And I don't pawn it off like it's my idea, like I saw it or heard it somewhere else. I mean,
well, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, sometimes people don't take you seriously because you don't have the extent of background that other people do, and they can sometimes be dismissive. And if you tell them, well, you know, I know another production that did this, it makes it sound like, oh, okay, so this is something that's done, another production did it, oh, yeah, you were on that film and they were doing this. For some reason, in people's heads, all of a sudden it becomes okay to do it.
Yeah, people can be strange that way. It's like,
well,
okay,
I understand people.
Yeah,
I think it's a good thing. Yeah, and people can be strange that way. But I mean, I went to college, and you know, it's like I have a degree in liberal studies, and then I went into communications, and then I went into social behavioral sciences, and then I went to journalism, and now I'm getting a liberal arts bachelor's. So I have a lot of these social groupthink classes, and how people in the same communities tend to kind of share a brain. Like, for some reason, a lot of people have a hard time being individualistic when they are part of a larger group that they consider family or consider something they aspire to be part of. It's like, God forbid you think differently.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that in different, all kinds of different professions. And
yeah.
Sometimes not even
it's human behavior.
A profession. Yeah, you just go somewhere and you're in a group and it's some people
mm-hmm.
just act like, I don't have a brain because I'm in a group.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see it in religion, you see it in politics, you see it with family units, you see it in relationships. It's a human behavior. It's, you know, some people they strive more for acceptance than they do for, for being true to themselves. And I think that's just they're just predisposed that way. Some people, they want to belong. They want to feel like they belong. And to some people, I think it's a priority over other things. Whereas some people are not as attached to that. I think it's just how you're made up. I mean, I know we all want a sense of belonging, but some people are willing to sacrifice more for it than others.
Well, yeah, and it does have a lot to do with what happens to you throughout your life, because, like me, I'm a person that's a little on the heavy side, and so when I was younger, I was made fun of a lot. Now, of course, I would have liked to have been accepted, but after a while, I just started thinking, you know what? Who cares if they accept me? And now that I'm 60 years old, I couldn't care less what anybody thinks. You don't like me? Fine. You don't like the way I look? Don't look at me.
Right. And you know what? I think a lot of how we interpret information and what we do with it also, because it defines who we are, like you're saying, some people are much more people pleasers. Some people go throughout their lives, taking on the responsibility of making sure everyone likes them, of not disappointing everybody, of not being a failure, and when your validation comes from outside yourself, it puts you in a very precarious situation. I think it's a very dangerous situation for a lot of people, but it's hard to break the cycle once you've begun it and you've been doing it all your life. I get that. But like you, it wasn't that I was heavy, but I was the kind of person that when I was very young, like elementary school young, I really, really wanted to be accepted. I really wanted friends. I really wanted to be part of the crowd. And I never quite fit in because true to self, I'm always very opinionated. And I was not part of groupthink. I was somebody who, even if everyone thought something, I would say something different. I'd be like, no, I don't think so. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Or if somebody was everyone said right, I said left, if I really believed it. So even though I wanted acceptance, I wasn't willing to compromise myself. And that put me in a very, very lonely place growing up. I was very lonely growing up. I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. I was better one-on-one than I was in groups because I always kind of stuck out like the odd person. Like, I just wasn't on board with what everybody else was doing. And, one example, Halloween, I think it was sixth grade or seventh grade, and I used to hang out with all these cheerleaders. I was the only one that was not a cheerleader. I was the only one that was a brunette. And they all said they wanted to dress up like punk rockers for Halloween and that we were all going to get ready together, et cetera, et cetera. Well, as things turned out, they were like, okay, we already got together and got ready. We'll just come pick you up. They had somebody's dad come pick me up. So they all got dressed up with glitter and bright colors, fluorescence and stuff. And I was the only one that was dressed in black, like gothic. And that was my interpretation of a punk rocker, like dressed in black, kind of like punk looking, and they're all wearing, neon colors, and I was like, no one thought to tell me, like, anything? Like, why didn't you guys call me and tell me it looks like you guys are wearing? And, that's an example of just being left out again.
Yeah. And I could probably tell you with a certain amount of certainty that they did that on purpose.
Of course they did. I know that, and I felt it. I felt it back then, but I felt bad. But at the same time, I never went against what I wanted or felt, and there was a sacrifice there. Granted, there was a sacrifice, but
to not compromise myself, and I cannot deny my opinions in the face of a question. And that's part of me. It's who I don't know what else to call it. I don't know how to define it. I don't know if I can ever really be a person that negates how I feel or what I think. You know, I'm very, very outspoken on Facebook. I have a lot of people that are, you know, like, oh my God, I can't believe you say the things that you do being in film. It's crazy. You're not going to get any work. And I said, just relying on others to give me work.
You know, some people just worry too much about what other people say. I mean, and I understand it on one hand, because I used to, like you say, I used to try to fit in, and for a while, when I was younger, I let people walk all over me, and I got tired of all the footprints on my back, and I'm like, no, I don't need to do that anymore. And I got a job at a video store, and I had just started. I was only there for like a week, and the big boss came in, meaning, you know, from the whole state, came in.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
And and he was like checking stuff out, making sure that the store manager was doing what all they were supposed to do and everything. And he come over and he was being kind of nasty to me. Now, mind you, this is when I was already older, which means I wasn't going to take crap from anybody. I'm 30 years old. Yeah. No, I'm not going to take crap from you. So he comes over and he's kind of snooty and everything and says, well, you know, this is a little dusty here. Why don't you dust it? And I said, well, first of all, I just dusted that this morning. Second, the store is very dusty. If you've ever been in here before, you would know that it's dusty. I can dust it, and it will be dusty 5 minutes later. And I'll do it right now and show you. And I dusted it in front of him. And then I took him back to 10 minutes later and showed him that it was dusty. And I had people coming up to me, and they said, "Don't you know who that is? I can't believe you said that to him. You were almost yelling at him." I wasn't yelling at him. I was just telling him what the way it was.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Oh yeah, but he's the boss's boss. He's not even the manager's boss. He's the boss's boss's boss." And I'm like,
I don't care
who he is.
I kind of have the same thing. Like, after going through all that with my my middle school years and whatnot, something changed in my high school years where I stopped being a doormat. I got sick and tired of people treating me badly and just not being listened to and being judged because of whatever preconception people had. I had no idea what they were thinking. All I know was that I was consistently lied to. I was consistently like in groups of people that would do things together and leave me on the outskirts. I don't know what I ever did to these people. I really wanted to be part of their group and just be a friend. And, you know, I had not one malicious bone in my body. I really just wanted to be a peer. And it didn't work out that way for whatever reason. You know, I had a little bit of naive sense of self. I kind of believed that, like, if you were my friend, that I could just trust you and I didn't have to think twice about it. I was very willing to believe you if you said you were my friend, because that doesn't make sense for me. Like, to me, the way I think, it's hard to describe, but it's like, if you tell me something, unless you give me a reason to not believe you, it's like, okay, I take it at face value. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then later, if you do something that betrays me or is a lie or is deceitful, I'm like, what is the point of being friends with somebody if you don't want to be friends with them? Why would you tell somebody I'm your friend if you don't really want to be? Because it's not doing yourself a disservice. Like, be friends with who you want to be friends with. Like, what the fuck are you doing running around telling people you're friends with them if you don't want to be friends with them? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. It just, it's mind-boggling why people would do something like that. And I don't understand it. And so because I don't think that way, I'm not friends with people I don't like. Plain and simple. I can be cordial, I can be civil, and because I'm an adult, you know, whatever, but I'm not going to hang out with them. I'm not going to say, hey, we're friends, and secretly think I hate this person. That's to me the definition of insanity. Like, why would you put yourself in that position?
Well, the ones that kill me are the ones that, you know that you don't like the other person, and they know that you don't like them, but yet they'll ask you to go out somewhere and do something.
Oh, yeah.
I used to have that with people I worked with. They'd say, hey, let's go to the bar, and I'd be, no. Well, why not? Because I don't like you. I came right out and told, because I don't like you. Why would I go to the bar with you?
I used to turn it around on them, like, if that happened at work. And it's happened to me, too, totally. I we both know we don't like each other. And they're like, oh, why don't you come with me? I was like, why? You never even talked to me. Last time you said something to me was derogatory. Now you want me to hang out with you? I'm not really sure where I stand here. Should I go with you and hang out, or should I just be like, no, fuck you, bitch? I'm kind of sarcastic that way. I'm like, I don't know, which foot do I stand on with you? Left foot, right foot? Like, hey, make up your damn mind. But it's like, and they just kind of look at you like, they try to put on this face like you're the crazy one. Like, okay, dude, I just asked you to come out with me. And I'm like, yeah, no, like, do you not get my sense of humor? Like, you're out of your damn mind.
Yeah, because the whole purpose of going out is to have fun. And I'm not going to be able to have fun if I'm out with somebody that I don't like. Now, if it's in a group, that's different, because there's more than one person there. But if it's only going to be me and a person I don't like, no.
Well, most likely they're just kind of digging for ammo against you. Most likely they just want to find out something that they're going to not like even more, or find out who you're friends with or what your thoughts are on something, and they're going to turn it against you later on. It's I've been in situations like that so many times. It's like, this, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I hear you. And I get people like that mad, because I can't tell you how many times I've had people come up to me and say, at whatever job I was working at, did you know that they're saying blah, 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 blah about you? And I'm like, yeah, and?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but aren't you worried about that? I'm like, no, why should I care what
you're so much like me. It's exactly what I say. I'm like, why am I worried about them? I'm perfectly happy with who I am.
Yeah, and then what really gets them is when I say, hey, you know, if somebody's talking about me, then I must be pretty interesting, or else they wouldn't be talking about me. That's the way
I look at it. Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, it's like, I'm glad I'm renting space in your head. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, great. You know, if I find that interesting, if you want to start rumors, or if you want to et cetera, I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, anyone that knows me is going to know that all that stuff is crazy. And if they don't know me and they want to believe that stuff, I don't want to know them anyways.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because I know people like that too, like the whole group think, you know, it's like you come into a new environment and one or two of the top dogs already make up their mind about you. They start telling everybody, they already start getting the think thing going, like, oh, yeah,
right.
Well, yeah, I saw her do this, or yeah, she walked in and said this, and you know what, I didn't think she looked at me kind of funny, like I get a weird vibe from her. They already start the negative think. And then it's like, you haven't even done anything yet. You're walking into a new place. You're trying to be friendly. You're just like, okay, doing your thing. And they already start in on you without you doing anything. And it's like, you have the following people that would rather belong to the group than stand out and say, well, I like her. What's wrong with you? You know, like, and it's like, they get everybody against you for nothing just because they have some, whatever, preconceived notion of who you are or whatever.
Yeah, or they don't like the way you look, or whatever it is.
They think I'm a threat, you know, whatever, because I get that from girls, because they think I'm pretty or whatever, and I don't know, I'm after something they've got or whatever, and I'm like, guess what? Beauty is the tip of the iceberg. Like, I have brains, and beauty has never got me anything I ever wanted except for bad attention, because you want me to tell you what pretty gets me? Pretty gets me attention from guys I don't want to talk to. From girls that are jealous of me and bitches to me, okay? Like, it has done nothing, okay? So, you know, don't put it up there like it's a freaking attribute.
I'm just laughing because I agree with you. That's why I'm laughing. I don't agree with you, because I do.
I get it, you know.
Yeah, I don't mean to stop you, But for the listeners, maybe we better talk about a couple more films. Although I'm sure.
Oh yes, well, hi listeners, let's talk about psychology some more.
I'm sure they enjoyed our little chat because actually,
I'm sure.
most of the listeners, that's what they've said, that that's why they like my show, is because
yeah.
I don't just like have one set way that I do it, and sometimes we barely
mm-hmm.
talk about movies and. You know, well,
mm-hmm.
But I figure we could talk.
Well,
about
I think it's good to know to the other person too, because my film experience is not super extensive. I've had some rough patches and good patches, like everybody else in any career, I think. I think it's good to know the person behind the film person. I think it's good to know who they are. I mean, like the film stuff, the publicity, the Facebook posts about movies and acting jobs and booked it and whatever, that doesn't tell me anything about you. It's like, okay,
right.
Good.
Right. Well, and that's one way, one reason why I start to show out the way that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the people that I know, I mm-hmm. ask the same questions for the audience so that they can get an idea of the person. Like, when did you want to get into filmmaking? And I had one person on, because I do research as much as
mm-hmm.
I can on a person. And one
yeah.
person I had on, she didn't know that I knew some things about her. And so I asked her some stuff, and she said, "Wow, you really researched me, didn't you?" And I said, "Well, yeah, that's a good interviewer.
A good interviewer knows a little bit about who they're interviewing so they don't get caught off guard."
Right. And so it made for a really nice show because most of her fans, most, didn't
mm-hmm.
know that she is a parachuter.
Oh, cool.
And, most of her fans don't know that. And
mm-hmm.
she's even got a Book of World. Well, she doesn't have it. She was in a group, and they
mm-hmm.
got a Guinness Book of World Records. And so,
oh,
I mean,
wow.
that was cool. Yeah. So we.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So I like.
That's
to
something
try to
I would love to do. I would love to parachute, skydive. That'd be fun.
Yeah. And one person. I had on the show, I had mentioned something, and then one of their friends, actual friends, they've been friends for like 30 years, they were listening
mm-hmm.
to the show, and then they contacted
mm-hmm.
me on Facebook and said, "I've known them for 30 years, and I didn't know that."
That's really cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a good interviewer. That's a good interviewer. It's somebody that knows how to ask questions and listen to the answer and pick up on more questions that get asked that lead to a different conversation.
Right. And, you know, I try. So,
yeah.
Well, there's this other one that's like in pre-production too, so I'm not sure how much you can say about it. But
mm-hmm.
you're acting and being an associate producer. My friend Billy, is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, the filmmaker is Michael Moustassos, and actually I'm a producer, and I had a small role on his movie, The Butcher. So that premiered at Shock Fest last year in Vegas. And then it went on to several festivals. It's won all sorts of awards and stuff. And so when he wrote my friend Billy, he had contacted me and said, "Hey, I want you to produce this too," because I had originally put him in contact with the distributor for Butcher. So he said, "I'm going to use the same distributor. So basically you're a producer on this too, or an associate producer, because I'm still using the contact you gave me." And I said, "Well, that's cool of you." I never asked that of him. So, you know, I was like, "Yeah, right on." So, you know, he gave me a small role in My Friend Billy, and it's an original concept, and he wrote it himself. And I think production is going to start for that in April or May, he said. I can't really share too much about it because, I mean, this is still in pre-production as well. And I know
right.
that he has most of it cast. But I know he has other plans for the movie, but I can't go into what, because I know that there's another story segueing out of it into another horror anthology type thing. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he's writing a little offshoot. But I really can't go into it more than that.
Okay. Well, why don't we go back to one that you can talk about, which you said a little bit about it. You said a little bit about it already, but this way you can say more. The Butcher.
Sure.
Like, give a synopsis and, you know, tell us a little
bit more. Okay, so The Butcher is the story of a serial killer, and he's in L.A., and he actually kills foreigners. So people that come to eat in his restaurant or whatever, he murders them, and then he feeds it back to people. So what he does, he injects the meat with mad cow disease. that's his thing.
Oh.
And so, yeah. So it goes into all this, and, like, you know, he's haunted by his mother's ghost, and he sees his mother and stuff, who always tells him negative things and what are you doing and this and that, you know, whatever. So it goes on. The story is just that he never gets caught. And so he does this, and actually there's going to be a Butcher too that he wrote, and then it's going to continue on Thaddeus's journey. This time I think he's going to be in a different country, and he's switched up his MO a little bit, but he's going to continue on his killing spree. And it's, like, super gory, and it was fun to do. It was fun to see, you know, the production and the makeup was a lot of fun. The makeup artist is fantastic on The Butcher, and she's also going to be on My Friend Billy, and of course Butcher too. She's really great with prosthetics and, like, all that gore and fake skin stuff and silicone. I mean, like, I'm blown away by some of the stuff that she posts on Instagram and Facebook. I'm like, oh my God, that's so realistic looking. Her name is Marisol Almeida. If you ever find, she's very talented. She's very, very talented. And Michael and her are good friends, and he uses her for all his horror stuff. So I know that she'll be part of the next couple projects for sure, if she doesn't overbook, because now that, you know, Michael totally promotes her to other filmmakers, and she's getting all sorts of work from what I understand.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah. I'm happy for her.
She deserves it.
Absolutely. Yeah, she works hard at it, and she really does a great job. I mean, like, she did something, I don't know, I think it was last week I saw on her Instagram, she did a puppet's face, like My Friend Billy, but on her own face. And it's like, oh my God, like, that is so good looking. I was like, that's the kind of thing that you would see on big productions. Like, I'm like, whoa, that's fantastic. I think she'll be very successful.
I think so too, because I've seen some of her stuff, and I think so
too. Yeah. She's got a talent for it.
She does. She most definitely does.
Yeah. And Michael's a good friend to her, so has really helped promote her work to other people. So I know other people in the film community is horror, you know, that's where special effects makeup kind of goes into more. So
right,
I know
yeah.
that she's getting work with other filmmakers too and doing stuff. So I'm super happy to see that, because talented people, you know, they need the PR as much as they can get.
Well, yeah, they do. And that's why I, as much as I can, I promote people that are my friends. When they have new projects coming out, I put them up on my wall, and then my friends share it on their wall, and before you know it, it's all over the world. So, and that's really what
that's fantastic, and I think we can do that for a lot of our friends. When I see somebody who's doing well, I'm always like, hey, great job, or whatever, you know, like, I like people to be successful. I want people to do well. I mean, it's a hard enough industry without shooting each other down.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. We've only got, believe it or not, we've only got a little bit over 5 minutes left.
Oh my God, a whole 5 minutes. All right, let's tackle one more thing.
Okay, what about, just make it short, of course, Hard Visit, if there's anything you could tell us about that, which I think you could, because that's completed, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's completed. So Hard Visit was a cool little thing, actually. a friend of mine, Gary Lopez, introduced me to a filmmaker, Josh Mitchell, in L.A. And we went to some Hollywood event. I don't even remember exactly what it was. But I met Josh there, and the first things out of his mouth was, "I've got a role for you." And I'm like, "Okay, who are you?" Like, I was like, you know, smiling and whatever, but I was like, "Huh?" And because they were shooting part of it in Palm Springs, and, you know, I happened to be in Palm Springs. So anyways, they wrote the script, and I think it was like a $5,000 budget, and there were like three producers on it. And so I had a small little role in there of Piper Kissinger. And I was just like the floozy in the spa, like hitting on the lead man, like he's on the phone or whatever. I'm just sitting there like playing up to him or whatever. Like, no big deal. You know, it was like a short little scene. And but I ended up becoming friends with all of them. And they had the premiere in West Hollywood. And then I organized a premiere in Palm Springs on his birthday. So I did that with his permission, of course. He sent me the Blu-ray, and I actually contacted the theater. I raised the money to rent the room. I sold the tickets, like all this stuff, and I got like the food for it and the meet and greet. We got the step and repeat to take pictures in front of. We had a slideshow of all the different sponsors that had contributed to renting the room. And we showed it there, and then we had a Q&A with those of us on the film after the film, and then we all hung out at the Hard Rock afterwards, and it was great.
Aww.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So I've always been an organizer. I've always been somebody who loves events and loves to produce and do things, because I was only an actor on it. I wasn't anything else. But, you know, it was funny because when I did this, Josh was like, you know, I did the whole thing together, like, by myself. I like did that like in a month's time. I got everything ready and together and had everybody come out. And he was just like, "You might have a little producer blood in you." And I'm like, "I think you're right, Josh."
Well, and that is what makes a good producer.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So yeah,
I'm
it's
sorry,
just in my nature. No, 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 it's fine. It's just my nature to be that way. It's I don't pretend to be, I don't aspire to be something I'm not. I just kind of fell into it, and the more I ended up doing things on projects, the more I realized I'm a producer-type person.
Well, that's good that you found your little niche that way. That's cool
yeah.
when you, like, fall into it.
Yeah. Well, it kind of fell into it started off with acting, and I think it had to happen that way because that first production that didn't go anywhere taught me a lot about the film industry in a sense of nothing really came together on it. So I started digging because I'm somebody, when I don't have answers, I want to find them. And I'm like, well, how come this didn't go anywhere? How come he did it this way? How come he didn't do this? And then I would talk to people and ask questions. And whenever I went to events, I was always digging around for how this thing works. How does the film industry work? Like, why is there, like, no one site where you can find all the answers? It's always like, well, you can do it this way, or you can do it that way, or you can do this, or maybe you can do that, and then blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know what? There's not one place on earth I can find all the answers. And of course not. You know, something that as
right.
something with as many moving parts as the film industry has, there's no one way to do things. But there are set standard ways of doing certain things. There are some things you cannot skip. There are some things you have to have in place to have a successful project. But that does not mean you can't stray on certain things and do things differently and a little out of the box.
Right.
So, I mean, there's like your points of you actually have to stick by these things. But what you do in between them is up to you and how you construct it and how you build your project. So it gives
right.
you room to grow and room to divert from things. But at the same time, there's a structure to it that you have to adhere to.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And
mm-hmm.
we're actually down to like the last 30 seconds, but they do let you go a little bit over. So I'll just let you tell people what's the best way to get a hold of you, and then I'll close out the show.
Okay. So the best way to get a hold of me, my Facebook page is Caroline DeGrave. And so one of them is my personal profile and the other one is my fan page. They both have the same name. Obviously, one is going to ask you for a friend request and the other one is just going to be like a like page so you get updates. And I'm not somebody who posts a whole lot, so you're not going to get inundated with all sorts of crap every day. Because I understand that some pages will update every 2 seconds, it seems, and I end up unfollowing because I don't need notifications every 5 seconds. But, you know, that's one way to do it. Else you can do Firefly 55 Films on Facebook, and you can find that page. Other than that, you know, private message me. I do use Messenger, and I do respond to people that are serious and inquire about work. If people want to date me or just be friends with no actual, you know, like interaction, that's not really going to work. Like, hey, I just want to be friends with you. Let's start talking. Tell me what you're doing today. No, I'm not going to. I've got too much stuff to do. You know, like if my question to you is, who are you and what do you want? And you haven't come out and said it, it's probably not going to go very well.
Okay, well, thank you very much, because we may be cut off pretty soon. It's hard to tell because
they don't actually
tell you.
Oh, that's fantastic, darling. Well, it's a great pleasure to talk with you, Mac. I really enjoyed it, and they cut us off, but thank you so much for having me on the show, and I hope some people listened and enjoyed what we talked about, and you know, and I saw your list of people that you have upcoming on the show, and it looks really exciting.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being on the show. And so I'm going to say goodnight now and stay safe. And I wish you much success. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I wish you lots of success as well.
Oh, thank you. Okay,
all
bye.
Right, sweetie. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye.